the Geek Girl Riot.
Geek Girl Riot.
Welcome to another episode of Geek Girl Riot, and today is going to be Clone Chat. My name is Alice Wong, and I'm here chatting with one of my sisters, Bailey Johnson. Bailey, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Bailey Johnson, a happy sister of Alice, and I am not in the same room as Alice right now, but we are in the same state, and we're both in California, and I have a few chronic illnesses and disabilities, and I write and advocate for disability rights online, and working on my own nonprofit that I'm hoping can help us pursue disability rights even further in the future.
One thing that's, you know, fantastic about people on Twitter is that we discovered we have a lot of similar TV interests. And we immediately connected with our love of Orphan Black and all things sci-fi, such as Star Trek. And I think today I'd like to talk about a Twitter conversation you and I started having that just snowballed into a really fun and really fascinating conversation about cloning. There is a spoiler alert. We do spoil Orphan Black TV show and also the movie Never Let Me Go. So, Amanda, do you want to like review for us in terms of this article that you read and that you tweeted about?
Well, it was a show. It was Vice Essentials on Viceland, which honestly, I recommend the Viceland channel to most people. They have so many informative and entertaining shows. But they had on one of the Vice Essentials, which is news, it's a news show, they were talking about cloning in Siberia. And apparently genetic cloning has gone much further than most people realize. And like dogs are cloned all the time. In fact, they said if you ever have a dog that their nails glow in the dark, you have a clone dog. That's actually a thing that they've spliced into clone dog DNA so that people can identify clone dogs a little more easily. Clone dogs, their nails tend to glow in the dark. So some people have never had a dog with dark nails, but some people will be like, oh my God, I've had like three dogs with glow-in-the-dark nails. In fact, I think I've had one. Like that was a puppy and I gave it away. Like I didn't think anything special because it's nail glows. I just thought it was the color. So in Siberia, they found a whole baby woolly mammoth intact, and they're going to be working hard on cloning it and bringing back the extinct woolly mammoth, which is mind blown out of this world. It's one thing too to clone something that already exists, but they want to bring back an animal that was wiped from existence, and that's crazy.
And did they say why they want to do the woolly mammoth?
I think that it was because it's an extinct animal that there's already a thriving market for. So mammoth hunters is like a really heavy thing because mammoth tusks are like elephant tusks. They have their own industry. It's worth even more, I believe, than elephant tusks. And they carve them into all types of little stuff and big stuff, just like elephant tusks. So because people mammoth hunt, you already have a thriving industry of people going out and doing all the hunting for you. And the scientists just get the extra stuff that they can't really use anyway.
Wow, that's pretty disturbing. It says that we're going to bring back the species just to kill them for their tusks. I mean, isn't that kind of messed up?
And that's the crazy thing that I don't think they're even thinking about. If there's already an industry for their tusks and you bring them back, like, aren't people going to hunt them? Like, they're going to run out of extinct tusks to find. So I don't think they're even thinking that all the way through.
Yeah, it's a little grotesque if you think about it. Like, just
that circle of capitalism?
Yeah, you have the industry, and obviously there's going to be, you know, pirating and black markets of, I mean, as we've seen already with ivory. It's really...
Exactly.
It's and a really cruel practice.
There were people there who had basically a pantry with a few million dollars of mammoth tusks in them, or a couple million at least, just of mammoth tusks at their little storage facility.
Wow.
So it's not like people don't go hardcore to find this stuff, but I don't think they've even thought about it that way. You know, scientists feel like all science in life should be preserved. And it seems like they work on the assumption that everyone thinks like they do. Obviously, people don't, since all weapons of mass destruction.
I think when you tweeted that, you know, immediately we started talking about, like, hello, Jurassic Park.
Yeah,
like, hello, exactly. Did you not watch that movie? Read the book?
They're like, no, actually, I watched the movie, and I was like, but we'll do it right this time.
And I think, don't you think that's like the hubris of humans? I mean, not just scientists want to push the boundaries, but the hubris idea that it can't be perverted and corrupted and really just non-altruistic reasons for doing these things.
That's like the essence of Americanism.
It is. It is. It's like all profit-driven.
We do have that, like, youthful hubris of, like, we're going to be the exception.
We're going to do it right.
Yeah, it's like, sure, everyone else has fallen prey to propaganda or lies in order to go into war, whole nation being manipulated and it leading to failure, but that could never happen here because we're an exception.
So for you, what are some of your most memorable, like, clothes throughout sci-fi and movies and books in popular culture?
I would have to say one of my favorites would actually be the first movie that, like, haunted my dreams, mm-hmm. which was The Pod People.
Mm-hmm.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Like, that movie had me. People talk about scary movies now, but no. Like, that movie was all black and white, and just the last girl who gets changed over when she just dozes off for 1 second and then she opens her eyes back up like a Stepford Wife and you're like, how could she have been body snatched in that second?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, like your whole reality is shook. And then you see the whole field of pods that are just ready. That was the first probably instance of cloning in pop culture
mm-hmm.
that has stayed with me for life.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me, you know, I think when you started tweeting it, when we started tweeting each other, I mentioned this movie called Never Let Me Go. And for me, this was a movie about cloning that really shook my world, too. And just a heads up for the listeners, there's going to be spoilers for the movie because it's going to be, it's based on a novel. It takes place in a dystopian future.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all down for anything dystopian. I love anything dystopian, like any apocalypse, things
me
like
too,
that.
Usually.
Yeah. So basically, this story is about a future where these people are clothed and they're just basically like spare parts. And they don't even realize that they are clothed and they belong to somebody else. And when that person needs a new body part, it's just carved out of them and they have to survive until they die and they lose all their parts.
Wow.
Yeah, so you see at the beginning where like, these kids are happy, and they're, like, in this kind of orphanage, but, like, it's not an orphanage. And you have no idea, like, they're happy, they're just, like, raised to be, you know, creative and all that stuff. But only later, when they become adults, when all their organs are fully matured, and with these, this is, like, the future where these people who are really, really rich and can afford to have themselves cloned. And it was just really sad. It's, like, oh, shit.
But it's so realistic because
the
most altruistic reason people would have for cloning is, but people need sometimes spare parts, so this could be a great way to do that.
Yeah, and the idea that, you know, they don't have souls, and they don't have wants and needs. I mean, they want to find love, and they have identities, and they have personalities, but they're just not treated or given that personhood. And it's like, it's so heartbreaking for them. You see these characters trying to say, you know, I love this person. I want to be with them. Please don't chop me up for parts. But, you know, that's what they were born for. I mean, that was...
Yeah.
And so that to me was really disturbing because I think I really can see this happening in like 30 to 40 years from now. And I think...
Yeah.
I think I remember tweeting this to you, like, I have no problems with, like, cloning individual parts that we can get up, create for ourselves. But I really have trouble is, you know, I think once you start cloning sentient beings.
Yeah.
I mean, because they have the right to exist like anybody else. They have their own hearts and spirits and minds.
Yeah.
And you can't destroy those kind of...
You can't
use
conceptualize
people like that.
Humanity without conceptualizing consciousness. people always like, no, there's two totally randomly different points, but I've watched birds. Also, I have a ornithophobia, so I will caveat that. But I've watched birds, and birds can communicate across species, across neighborhoods. A bird can leave one bird in another place, migrate, and then still have plans like, I'll meet you back here on January 8th. Mm. And they meet that same spot on the same day. So I can't believe animals don't have language. But I can believe consciousness is different. Like, I don't think animals have doubt. Like, oh, am I going to regret doing this tomorrow? What will my mom's feelings be about me getting this job? Like, I don't think animals have that deep-seated consciousness that kind of ruins human life. Like, that thing that we're like, why can't I just be happy? Is the same thing that makes us a person, needing to think and assess and watch ourselves and be aware of our actions and the consequences of our actions is like an echo of our imprint in the world. And people who don't care about that, we're always so dumbfounded by them. Like, are you less than a person that you just don't think or consider your actions before you make them or after? And that's why it seems so dumbfounding to me personally. I think that consciousness is just, you can't keep creating people and think you're going to be able to not have consciousness become an important part of it.
Yeah, and I think it's really arrogant of like somehow humans have the monopoly on what it means to be human, right? Like, there's other ways of existing, other languages, emotions by other species. It may not be like ours, but it's theirs, right? Like,
yeah.
Who are we to say that ours is a higher plane of existence? I mean, there's really sophisticated things that we're not aware of, that dogs communicate with each other.
Every time I watch something about the ocean, I'm dumbfounded by the entire world. I'm like, I feel like the human world has just, it looks so small now compared to the ocean and everything happening beneath the water.
Totally. I think we're just barely scratched the surface of understanding the animal kingdoms. Who are we to judge and place us at the top, right? I think that's really what kind of makes me a hater on it. A misanthrope sometimes.
Yeah. The second thing I was going to say was just Viceland has this really interesting commercial right now where they ask people, how do you feel about human cloning? And I love people's answers because this one guy is so sweet. He goes, oh, that sounds tight. I'm a clone 6 of me when I can get it. Like, but also in another commercial, this guy said that he could never kill someone, like, to save even 100 people. He could never do it. So you know this is a good person. But also he's like, having 6 of me seems like it would be freaking awesome. And then two of these guys, they were like, well, I don't know. You could maybe clone people for parts. And then the other one was like, but then they might have feelings and stuff. It seems like that's going to get complicated fast. Like, everyone else seemed to quickly see, like, I think there's going to be issues with this. And, like, 4 out of 5 people basically said, I don't think we should do human cloning. If you think of yourself as a human and you're like, wait, cloning a human is going to create another person like me? I don't know. Like, we're dramatic.
Yeah, and also, I think, you know, as you and I are huge fans of Orphan Black, we've seen that once you clone somebody, they have completely different trajectories, personalities. They're not exactly the same, I mean, people. I mean, they have their own lives, their own wants and needs. I mean, they may be the same biologically.
It's that, like, overwhelming confirmation of nurture's influence on nature. Because their nature, you see the similarities, too. And then you see the overwhelming differences in how just different environment, different parents, different situation they grew up in changes how they are, who they are.
Yeah. So let's talk about Orphan Black a little bit and about their science and, I guess, their attitude to cloning. Because, again, I mean, I think one of the strongest things about the show is about seeing these women, these Sestras, take ownership of themselves. That their DNA is not a patent. Like, a corporation cannot own their genome. And what are your thoughts about that in terms of this whole idea about commodification and bodies and ownership?
I think that that's probably why we felt so inspired by them, because coming from that place of disability where you're ableist and you're judging yourself and you have these views on yourself. Mm. And then eventually you go, no, you know what? That's not right. Like, I don't care that's wrong. Like, even if I thought that for a little bit, I was wrong to think that, and you're wrong to think it now. And they're going to take back control of their lives and their bodies by literally any means necessary. And, like, I love when Sarah was like, why don't we just go on Oprah and ruin it for everybody? Like, she, like, really, it comes to that point where you're like, I will burn everything down if I have to get my freedom and my rights, but I won't just let you get away with taking them away in the night, slyly, like there's nothing wrong with it, and this is okay because I'm less than a person. And that's so important. Like, that's so important to how people who are disabled and people who feel like they have no power over the circumstances that they're in. Mm-hmm. It's so powerful to see an example like that where they don't have power. At the end of that first season, when you find out that their DNA, their whole genome is patented, it's like they are property, licensed property. And they're still like, fuck no. Like, no, yeah. no. You're not going to own me. You can't tell me I'm your property because I'm going to say no to that. And you can't tell me what you're going to do with me just because you helped me at some point, or maybe you did these things that seem good. Those things don't matter because I own me. I make those decisions for me, not you.
Yeah. And I think we've also seen throughout the different seasons of Orphan Black, the misuses of clothing. I mean, again, there's the idea of the caster line in terms of these super soldiers. And you can totally see this happening in real life in terms of governments wanting to build a super soldier. I mean, again, we're getting into bionics and cyborgs, but, like, it is not far-fetched to want to, like,
what was so crazy
weaponized about clones, right?
The boy clones was they weaponized the clones by turning the boys clones into a homogenized military force. And then when they found out that the boys did have like a genetic flaw, they weaponized that too. They just saw them purely as a tool to be dispensed or used. Once they saw, like, oh, we could use this flaw as a tool, go out and basically rape people so that we can find out how your tool works. And they had no problem. They didn't care about how that could affect them morally if they wanted to do that. And you saw the difference between the clones, like Mark, how he was affected by even being asked to do that. He was as deeply, he's like, that's not something I want to do. Okay, being a soldier, yeah, that's who I am. You raised me to be that. But then turning them personally into just making the violence so personal, that changed it for him.
Yep, and I think this is again where, like, people, you control people, but there's no way to control people. That's the hubris of science, and that's the hubris of the people that fund the science and control the science. And
in every season, they're saying it to someone like, oh, but you're just the experiment. Oh, you're just the science. To clarify, you're not a person whose feelings we can consider right now. You need to stop thinking of yourself like that because you're just a science project. And that's your benefit to the world. They're like trying to help you remember, like, oh, no, sweetie, no. The problem, the reason why you're feeling that is because you're thinking of yourself as a person. Instead of a petri dish.
And the idea that there are mistakes and that, you know, oh, you know, this generation was messed up, so we had to wipe them out. You know, this idea of this horrifying idea that they wiped out a bunch of Sestras all over the world because
who were girls. They weren't even women yet.
Yeah, just because they wanted to clean up their mess and keep on experimenting. And I guess this is what I think disabled women or disabled people are, you know, people that we know are huge fans of Orphan Black, is that we see the eugenics in this in terms of the evolution philosophy is to create the perfect human being. And as disabled people, we know there's no such thing because it's built on this impossible standard. And
to me, the impossible standard became so obvious in season 4 with Evie Cho, like, not just an Asian woman, a brown Asian woman. And she's perfecting what she says, human life. And for her, the perfect version of human life was still a blonde, blue-eyed, dimpled child.
Yeah.
It's like still somehow it reverted back to that. Even from a brown Asian woman's perspective, she's like, but let's not forget what perfection really is.
And also the exploitation of poor women using them as incubators for these experiments, right? I mean, we saw season 4 with Brightmoor, the company. They hired a lot of women of color, a lot of poor women to have these babies. And we saw this really, you know, horrific experience of these babies with a lot of disabilities being born and then being killed and left, you know, to die because, oops, we messed up.
Yeah.
Moving along, next one, you know, again, with no regard for, you know.
The way the guy, when he takes out that baby, the first time you see one of the babies born, with the oral clefts, the oral facial clefts, and he says, he lets out an expletive when he sees it. It's not an expletive like, this is a horrible thing, this baby is suffering. It's like, oh, I hit my son with a hammer. Like, he's just mad he messed up. Doesn't care about the kid's life, the baby's life. That means nothing. The baby's suffering means nothing to him.
Yeah, it's like this again. It's like, oops.
Yeah.
And also the price to pay in terms of, out of, like, let's say 500 births, you know, they're just going to keep waiting until they're going to destroy maybe 400 babies.
Yeah.
For the sake of 100 baby, viable, whatever, outwardly perfect babies.
And then Evie Cho, I love when she says, well, Da Vinci robbed graves to study human anatomy. In 100 years, they'll consider me genius. And it's like, well, first of all, dissecting human bodies is okay now when they're dead, if donated to science. Back then, that was not a thing. There was no such thing as donated to science. That is why we let Da Vinci slide. Not because he was a grave robber. It's because there was no such thing as donating a body to science at that time. So he had no weather safe way to explore human anatomy. But if you had to do it back then, that was the most humane way. There were people in every time who killed people in order to experiment on them or explore the human anatomy or explore the extent to which the human body could tolerate suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But those people aren't held as masters of their time who were just geniuses outside of the technology they needed.
Mm-hmm.
Those people aren't held that way. Those people are Frankensteins versus the Da Vinci's who were like, they were they doing their best. She's not doing her best.
Yeah, and again, this is again this idea of, you know, Frankenstein, the novel, the 1800s, is just as relevant today as it is, you know, back then. And it's, again, it's about fiction really being prescient about the issues that we are facing right now. I think it's really just so amazing how this genre of sci-fi, of fantasy, of fiction can really push the boundaries and bring up these things that I, you know.
I think Full Metal Alchemist takes that Frankenstein concept to a more artificial life, full exploration. Because you see how alchemy and golems and that whole Frankenstein mythology type system based on creating your own life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it all is about. Like, I'm above it. I'm the one who's going to make life now. That mentality is explored in more depth, I think, in even Full Metal Alchemist. I think that things like that, you see how people, they see that you can take it off into cloning, or you can take it into, I'm just going to find my own way to be God without cloning, but still try to play God. Either way, they're trying to do the same thing. So I'm going to beat the universe. Like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, the other thing that I love is tangential, but it's about, yeah, this technology. It's like Ghost in the Shell. We create, again, it's kind of like, you know, there's definitely parallels to clones and cyborgs in the sense that humans are creating these things for our own usage. So we have cyborgs that are built to serve us.
Yeah.
And we're creating this, you know, again, this master-slave kind of dichotomy. And, you know, once you have that happening, slaves are always going to uprise because you just can't control people. And, this is the same for cyborgs. Once you give them artificial intelligence and the ability to evolve, there's no way they can completely serve you unquestioningly.
I think that Star Trek did a good job exploring that. Maybe that's why I feel like consciousness, too, is so essential to life. Because Star Trek, they explored so many versions of life that by the end, you're like, maybe anything could be life. If it has consciousness, I think you should probably respect it. Beyond if it can reproduce, beyond if it's biological, beyond if it, the consciousness is really becomes more than anything. Data or the Doctor from Voyager in Star Trek universe, they're both good examples of, they don't fit technically all the standards for life, although Data does build a daughter at some point, but that consciousness just beats at you over and over, like, but I can't keep denying that that is life. That thought is life. You can't just violate that thought and say that you're not violating the sanctity of life, I don't think.
It is personhood, but in a different way, right? It's like, there is personhood in these other creatures. They may not look like humans. It's kind of like Odo as well, right? I mean, there was a lot of debate on when Odo, when he was in his liquid form, he was experimented and relentlessly and poked and prodded and, you know, forced to take the shape of a solid just to communicate with humans. But again, you know, he really had to, like, prove his own humanity, you know, his own worth and his own personhood.
Yeah, I saw the episode of Star Trek a couple weeks ago where someone literally comes onto the Enterprise and Data has orders to come be a science experiment. The guy's trying to recreate the type of brain that Data has, and even though he's not sure if his method is going to work, he still wants to do an invasive procedure on Data in order to try. And Data's like, I'm looking over your research. It's not sound enough for you to do this invasive procedure on me. And he's like, thought you might say that. That's why I went and already had you ordered to do it, because you're not a person.
Right, and you're a property of Star Trek, right?
It's you're just a tool. Don't forget that. You're a screwdriver.
You're a property of the Federation because you're created by a scientist.
And that checks his personhood so much. And it checks all of his friends' acknowledgement of his personhood. And I think, too, that sometimes that's how ableism can be perceived. Your friends can get over it first after they've been around you so long. They don't think that way anymore. And they forget everyone else still does.
Mm-hmm.
And your friends are like, no, you're a person. And you're like, oh, no, my friend, you've forgotten. I'm not really a person to everyone else. I'm just a thing in the way. You consider me a person, but that's a special exception, I guess.
Yeah, and I think this is, again, like, I don't know if it's really, you know, provocative to think about this, but I really do think of sometimes people with disabilities are like aliens.
Yeah.
We're really confronting this kind of able body standard, right? Or what it means to be human. And I think it scares a lot of normative people. People are shook up by our bodies and our ways of thinking and behaving and being. And, you know, a lot of people react really viscerally to our different points of view. And it's really interesting how it's so disturbing to some people. And rather than thinking of it as part of this wonderful diversity of our genome, right? I think, you know, my disability is through a genetic mutation. I would never want to delete this mutation in our genome because it's part of, once you try to delete every mutation, you're going to lose a lot of the heterogeneity that we need as a species to survive, don't you think?
I definitely think so. And I don't think that people realize how resistant they are to empathy, and that things like disability's existence provide a source of forced empathy. In every culture, even in the ocean, even in animal culture, empathy draws from caring about something weaker for the first time so often. I loved that about Finding Nemo.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the good things in Finding Nemo, which you also see in real life in the ocean. You'll see families of fish where one is injured and really shouldn't have made it, but somehow that school of fish has kept that one that shouldn't have made it going with them.
Mm-hmm.
And after they study them, they're like, they must have slowed down at some point to help them keep up. They must have functioned differently to keep this one alive. But they were okay with doing that.
Yeah, and there's something cooperative about it. I mean, there are elephants and primates who clearly do that. You know, there's a sense of, like, collective access and solid, you know, sharing, you know, helping each other out. And there's also the laws of the jungle and, you know, survival of the fittest, right? I mean,
yeah.
There's definitely both of that. I mean, it's a rough world for humans, animals, you know, everybody. But yet, there's also that capacity to show a lot of compassion for one another.
I agree with that. And maybe it's the resistance between emotional survival of the fittest and physical survival of the fittest that keeps people torn. Like, they feel they need to physically compete, and helping people who can't physically compete is getting in the way of natural evolution. But you have to be able to compete emotionally as well in order to survive as a human. At some point, it's like people realize that. The majority of people try to realize that. Like, I guess I do need emotional maturity to get through life. It seems important. I feel like disability is a part of that. Like, you are going to need to accept this to get through life. And empathy is going to be important for you getting through life anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's like, we're not going anywhere. And I think this is where, you know, I really do help people think more, you know, think twice about these ideas about genetic manipulation and this idea about gene editing, which is already happening. It's very real. You know, this idea
yes,
about,
it is.
Yeah, people think twice about, what are you removing from our culture and our society? It is really not, you know, science fiction anymore. It's right now in front of us. And parents who fret about having a healthy baby, let's think about what does it mean to be healthy, right?
Yeah. I think that if more people go into watching sci-fi with the mentality of these characters that are different, whether it's an alien like in Star Trek when you're watching Vulcans or Klingons try to adapt when they're in an all-human situation, or when you're watching Star Wars and you're watching C-3PO and R2-D2 try to keep up, or even when you're just watching E.T. and those kids just save him and take care of him and they protected him just long enough so that he would be okay and be able to take care of himself, but that saved his whole life. Going into watching those things with that mentality of these are actually representations of a different form of life or a different way of living. And if you watch the people who discriminate against them or the people who mistreat them, that they're almost always regarded in ableist ways. The way they're treated is almost always how people who are sick are treated. And if you see someone who is being treated like, hey, you're basically nothing, we can just throw you away or sell you or give you away or put you away, that is how so many disabled people are treated. And when people are treated like just property or just an experiment that they can throw any medication at you, any treatment at you, and you're wrong for not wanting to try something that's just an experiment on your life. That is the ableism that actually all disabled people are faced with, just displayed in a different light.
Yep. It's just in a different package, in a different,
like, that is actually what disabled people and neurodivergent people are living through every day. And if you realize that when you're watching it, you're like, oh, wow, people are really treated like C-3PO. Like, people will treat you like that. Like, people will be that much of an ass to you just because you don't empathize the same way they do, even if they know you care about them and you're only there to help them and you're helping them all the time. People still act like you're a second class citizen.
These are, I think, really important thoughts that hopefully people will consider the next time they watch a sci-fi movie. Or, and I think, you know, for people who haven't watched Orphan Black, you know, please consider watching it. And, you know, just looking at it through this lens that Bailey and I just talked about. So, just signing off for Geek Girl Riots, I'm Alice Wong.
I'm Maylee Johnson. Happy to be here with you guys.
Bye. See you later.
Bye.